Hello, it's Jane Hoffman on a balmy Sunday night. About earlier today, it was minus 25 below in Duluth. Now it's probably hovering around zero. Tonight's topic is twofold. We're going to talk about being a prodigal son or daughter, losing your way and finding your way home, and also religion in the White House. Can someone practice their true religion without letting power get in the way? I will get into that secondly. I'm going to read the chapter, the verses, Luke 15:11-32, about the prodigal son. And he said, there was a man who had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of the property that falls to me. And he divided his living between them. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all he had and took his journey into a far country. And there he squandered his property in loose living. And then when he had spent everything, a great famine arose in the country, and he began to be in want. So he went and joined himself to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into the fields to feed swine. And he would gladly have fed on the pods that the swine ate, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have bread enough and to spare, but I perish here with hunger. I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants. And he arose and came to his father, but while he was yet at a distance, his father saw him and had compassion, and ran and embraced and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, bring quickly the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and make merry. For this was my son who was dead and is alive again. He was lost and he is found. And they began to make merry. I'm scrolling down. Now the elder son was in the field, and as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of his servants and said, and asked, what does this mean? And he said to him, your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf, because he has received him safe and sound. But he was angry and refused to go in. His father came out and entreated him. But he answered to his father, lo, these many years I have served you, and I never disobeyed your command, yet you never gave me a kid, meaning a goat or a calf, that I might make merry with my friends. But when this son of yours came, who has devoured your living with harlots, you killed for him the fatted calf? And he said to him, son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. It was fitting to make merry and be glad, for this your brother was dead, and he is alive. He is lost, and now is found. Good evening, Don. Good evening, Don. Can Don Gallimore hear me? Because I'm not even on a cell phone tonight.
Hello? Who? Who's not on the cell phone?
I'm on my land phone tonight, so there should be no problems hearing me.
I hear you. Do you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
All right.
So,
I'm on the phone.
John Gallimore Yoder is now the culprit oversleeper.
Okay, well, that's no problem. Because
he was lost, and now he soon will be found.
Good. Well, I'm working right now, so you're gonna have to make.
Are you on an Uber call?
Yes, I am, and for the most part.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna talk. Here's John Yoder. You can pipe in when you want to pipe in, okay?
All right, no problem. I'm good right now, but I'll be picking up my third fare ever. So this
well,
is a historic
night. I just talked to you 45 minutes ago, and you've already given three rides?
Yes, ma'am. Well, I'm going to my third.
John Yoday is on the line. He was lost, and now he's found. He was absent, but now he's present.
Wow.
It's the story of the prodigal son.
So Don is doing rideshare. Can he come down to Santa Monica and give me a lift?
He's doing
sure.
Uber, and he just signed up tonight.
Well, no,
oh, cool.
I signed up before, but tonight is my first night. And it takes you that long to...
Supercalifragilistic, uberipolicious. Go ahead and call John. Sorry.
How much would you charge me to pick me up in Santa Monica and take me over to Marina Del Rey?
I don't know. All of that money is because I'd have to drive from Reno. So it'd probably be a couple $100.
Oh, cool. Oh, yeah, I'll put it on the
and you top. wouldn't get to your destination probably till Tuesday morning.
That's okay. I'm in no rush.
Good.
Yale could give you a ride in her fancy Mercedes.
Oh, that I don't know because, you know, do you take dogs?
Well, she's a dog person now. Do you take dogs?
She was a dog. No.
She's not a dog. She's a blonde-haired former beauty pageant Kentucky girl.
A lot of them have turned out to be 40-year-old dogs.
Well, John can be the judge of that. The only rule is he can't marry her because she's my best friend and John's my best friend.
Oh, she's your best friend, the one that Don is employed with?
No,
she's
a female. She's my best friend from church, and John's my best male friend, and I don't want them to get married.
Oh, okay.
In other words, I'm jealous.
Jealous of John or jealous of the girl?
I'm jealous that she goes to his church now, and that he's marriage material.
And Jane
okay,
is
let me, let me repeat my question. Let me repeat my question real quick. Are you jealous of John or the girl?
I'm not jealous of John because he never strays from what God wants him to do. I'm jealous of any woman who may propose to him.
Yes, Jane is obsessed with finding out if we date, if we're getting married, what's going on with us, do we talk, do we see each other, how many times.
I only asked you one Sunday, and then you told me you had a business meeting.
No, you're all constantly texting, did you see her, are you guys getting married? It's like we don't even talk. We're like hi, you're she goes to the church, I'm in the board, I teach music. It's just we're not connected. Jane is trying to connect dots and things. And Yale is a very private person. She doesn't want her stuff. Even if we were married and had five kids, she doesn't want her stuff on public radio being talked about. So it's not the right format. You know, like Jane, you like to bring personal lives into public arenas, and that's okay if you're Trump or Beyonce or even me. But the people I know don't want that. So that's the kind of I have a secret life that you don't know about because people don't want their stuff out there.
Now you made me feel bad, and the show's only 10 minutes long so far.
That's okay. But see, like, I don't mind public stuff. Don doesn't mind, right? He did a confession last time, and I applaud you for it. It's like, you're not perfect. It's like, that's why I love you. Most people can't, you know, they can't sling their stuff out there. They're afraid. It's like, you know, it was a beautiful moment. And you know,
I have a political story from a different time era. Can we change the subject?
Yes, we may. We don't, because, you know, the thing is, Jane, I don't mind my stuff, but some people don't. So, you know, you just have
okay,
to leave
this
people.
Is the real story, so I can explain it to Uber Don. The real story is John and I have been friends for 18 years.
Hold
on. Don, are you busy?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Hold on one moment.
Okay, John and I have been friends for 15 years. We never came close to dating, and we're good friends, but there's a part of me that doesn't want you to date one of my friends. I don't care if you date a stranger.
This is one of my blog talks.
Great. Now the Uber cab ride, he gets to hear our personal life. So let's start with our prodigal stories. John, since you've never wavered from Christianity, was there ever a time you felt lost and then found through the spiritual eyes of Jesus?
Because I dated a couple people. One were into the relationship. They wanted to know if we were sexually compatible, and they were Christian. And I was Christian too. You know, I'd run into the thing of being married, you know, and in a relationship for 15 years. The person was unhappy and strayed. So I didn't want that thing of, like, to get married.
She never told you.
In this situation, this particular situation, I didn't want them to wait till we get married and then 10 years later go, you know, I'm dissatisfied, or I want to wander or have an affair or a fling. It's like, okay, you want to know if we're sexually compatible? Fine. So I was like, you want to test drive? That's before you buy? That's fine. We'll test drive. And then if you want to buy, you buy. And so, you know, we had a wonderful sexual encounter. And the point is, they didn't want to stop. It's like, no, that was just to know that we were compatible. It's like, we'll wait till we get married and we'll continue. And the other thing was like, we can't go back to what we were. You know, it's like, we're now a relationship, and now we're, you know, like, I want sex all the time. It's like, no, it's, you know, I need to be married to continue that situation, and we're not ready to marry. So that was a situation where for several months we're in this kind of semi-sexual thing. It's not guaranteed sex, but it's like it's an occasional thing going on, and I'm like, I just want to get married and let's, you know, be legit. And on the other hand, they're not ready to get married. So it's like, do I continue in this kind of living in sin thing, even though I'm not living together with them? Or, you know, do I blow off the whole situation? And eventually came to that head. It's like, we're not going to get married, and I'm not going to be with you. So, yeah, I've been in that situation. It's a bad place to be.
First, I want to ask, Don, you're on mute until your ride's over because I can't hear background noise. But my question is, do you think she was egging you on just to see how you were in bed, and then she just wanted things laissez-faire, like to keep things the way they were without any major commitment? Or were you guys just not in a financial position to get married?
No, she wanted to get married, and I was kind of the one putting it off in the sense of I wanted other things in line. So, but what I wanted to do was wait and hold off on sex until we got married. And instead of getting closer to getting married, the longer we were together, we were getting farther away. So I'm into this, like, I don't want to be the next 2 or 3 years living in sin, quote, even though, again, we weren't living together. But it's one of those things where, you know, we see each other 2 or 3 times a week, and one of those times we're going to have sex because she, you know, wants to have sex, and I don't have an objection with it. but I need to be married to do that. So it got to the point of, like, we're not getting any closer to getting married, because once we do, I'm not going to divorce. I'm going to ride this until one of us dies. And it's like, I don't want to get stuck in this situation. We got kids and, you know, and business commitments, and then this person is incompatible with me. So
yeah,
I was glad I got out of it, you know.
I agree, and I think as a Christian, I was just looking at I was at church today. It was 17 below, but the church was filled. There's a guy, a youth leader, got married in the summer, and he waited like 5 years till he got married and found the right one. And you're right. If you're a truly dedicated Christian, you can't continue in that compromised existence without feeling uncomfortable. And it probably was a push-come-to-shove situation where you had to make a choice. And then once you made the choice that you're not going to continue, did you feel more free?
Oh, yeah, no, here's the biggest problem with it, is like, I'm the one with the sexual organ, if you want to call it, you know, like the gun, and I'm the one pushing for, like, we need just to wait till we get married. And I've dated a couple other gals where it's that same scenario. It's like, if we're going to have sex, they don't want to stop. It's like, we got to keep having, it's like, no, I'm not going to do that. So I find it odd. It seems like I don't know if it's just the women I meet, but they're the ones who, you know, if you give in to them sexually, they want that power or that control. They will not take no for an answer. It's like, then we're not going to be together. It's like, well, then we're not going to be together, because, you know, I'm not going to cross that line. I'm not going to, you know, spend, you know, a couple of years banging someone on the side and saying I'm a Christian. It's just not going to happen. It's like, it's not a good way to be. So I think guys just have to be strong about it and set your demands, or otherwise you'll just get walked over. I think it's sexual control, you know, by either side when they start pushing that.
I agree, and I'm going to comment. I'm just going to make a public service announcement. Don, I'm letting you back in 2 minutes, and you're going to have to let us know what I can't text him because he's on his phone on our show. So I think in relationship to what you just said, my twin sister is very don't want to use the word dogmatic, but she's very firm in that celibacy. I've met several Christians, even young ones, not too many, but enough to know that if they're dedicated to that oath of celibacy, they're not going to compromise, and they're not going to live in a casual existence, because what ends up happening is that you start feeling backslidden, and it affects your spiritual walk with God, and you lose your compass in what your ministry is. And you also feel like you're a bad witness. So whether it's slipping into drinking or sexual promiscuity or even with one partner, it can cause a problem. And we have to realize that ultimately our desires on the earth are only temporal, and our spiritual eternal destiny, where we try to bridge the gap between what God's vision is for us and how we can define and detect that, versus trying to please other people, it just becomes a miserable situation. So,
well, you know,
with that,
go ahead. The problem with it too is that it's problematic, because really sex in the big picture at the end of the road, it's for having kids. Now, it's also for pleasure, yes, but the problem is if your intention isn't raising the family and having kids, then you're just pleasuring yourself. And it's kind of like, basically, it's like taking drugs. It's like sex is a drug. So it's not so much it's bad. It's just you only have so much time. So if you go over to someone's houses and you're making out for 2 or 3 hours and you have sex and you're tired and, you know, you just hang around, and then it's like you blow out a whole evening. Or, you wake up the next morning and it's like where did my whole evening go? So it's very anti-productive unless you're producing children, and it distracts your mind, because it blocks your mind from being rational. The first 3 months, you can't think. You can't make logical decisions because it's like a drug. Your brain fills up with all this happy chemicals, and you're thinking everything's great. It's like you're just banging each other. You're not working out the real stuff. Like, okay, you want to be a musician. She wants to be an astronaut or whatever. And you're not working together towards those goals. You're just hanging out and feeling like, you know, you love each other when really you're loving yourself. Like, you feel good about
yourself.
Well,
I think it depends what stage you're in, because, for example, I didn't get, the first time I ever had sex was in college and I was drunk. But the first time I got into a real relationship, I was between 21 and 23, and I really loved the guy. We dated 6 months, but he had a controlling mother. And plus, he lived 25 to 30 miles from me, so we would only see each other twice a week. I had just finished college, and he was in a tech program. The basic thing is there were a lot of emotional things involved. The sex was good, but we kind of had to sneak around. But I didn't really get into – I've only had really two healthy sexual relationships in my life, and it wasn't – neither one was involved with a marriage. And if you're between 18 and 25 to 30 and you have that really toxic sexual chemical experience, it is quite beautiful. But then it does come to a screeching halt when all of a sudden you realize that the other person might have different objectives, etc. So I wouldn't take that back for, you know, the two times that I had beautiful experiences was around age 23 and 51. I wouldn't take those back, but I wish I knew at 22 what I knew at 50. So I think you kind of lose your – you're allowed to lose your head when you're young, but when you're older, you kind of know better. With that, let's just quickly check to see if Don dropped his ride off. Don, where are you at right now? Don Gallimo. Don? Okay, well, he must be on a different plane. So can you comment based on what I said?
I think like marriage, it's a beautiful thing, and I recommend it for all kids. I really think a person needs that chance to fall in love and you know, shoot for the stars, have the Hollywood ending. It's funny, someone was watching Pretty Lady on their I was actually
Pretty Woman?
Pretty Woman with Julia Roberts, Richard Gere. You know, it's basically the gal who's stuck having to be a prostitute and to pay the rent, and Richard Gere picks her up, and they start a relationship. He's a super successful businessman, and he has the Hollywood ending at the end. He comes back for her, doesn't let her just, you know, go to the street. But in watching it, you know, it was on the TV at another person's house, so you can't help but watch it. And it was just so Hollywood. It's like like she's just a pretty girl and he's busy doing business, but their lives aren't connected in any way, except for he wants someone to, of course, you know, love him and understand him. And she wants the prince to come save her, but their lives, like, she's not going to be his assistant at work, you know, helping him out. Or I don't know if he wants to have kids. Maybe if he wants to have kids, that would be, they would have something in common. But still, she'd be raising the kids and he's doing his stuff. They're not really connected together. And I think once you get to a certain level in life, as you get older, we all want to be loved and admired. But there's a certain place where you have to ask, at what cost? You know, what am I giving up? How do we both connect together to do what we need to do? And that's where the big problem comes in. It's like, you
I
know,
think
it's,
the
it's,
big, yeah.
Go ahead.
The standing joke for you or me, because our lives are similar in the work sense, I don't even have time to open one email on Plenty of Fish, let alone look for a person. For example, I might catch somebody's eye in the grocery store. But I'm not actively looking because I don't really have time, and I've been so self-sufficient for so long that it would take a really big cosmic moment for anything to happen. So once I get off the linear path of working 80 hours a week, then I'll start maybe taking it seriously. But I better do it before I'm old and wrinkled.
Well, the problem for a guy, too, is you got to pay for everything. You know, you got to wine and dine, entertain, impress. And then once you obtain or hunt down this person, then you have to go back to your own life to support all this stuff. And they're busy wanting you to still wine and dine them. So there is a problem with that whole scenario.
I don't think all women nowadays expect that. Like, I think, well, there's two kinds of relationships I'm talking about. I read an article once that the second time somebody marries, it's usually somebody they already know, like from high school or college. And the other thing is let's just say you start dating a woman who works 40 hours a week as a legal assistant in the court system. She's not going to expect you to pay for every meal. You can go Dutch sometimes or go Dutch to a movie. It just depends on the person, how insecure they are.
We're not talking the dinner. We're talking about housing. We're talking about taking them on trips, you know, vacations. We're talking bigger money stuff, you know. I mean, and that, to start that process again, you got to, you call up a gal, hey, let's go to the movies. Hey, let's go to a concert. You know, I'm paying for the parking. I'm paying for the ride. You know, all that stuff. You've got to show up in a car that has status. You know, not in a beat up junky car. This is very common. Women want a guy with a real nice car, real nice clothes, real nice job and career. They have to respect the career that you're doing. They don't want a man that's weak and that doesn't have money. So
I don't think earthy girls who are like in the Occupy Wall Street movement, you've lived on the West Side too long. A lot of women in Duluth wouldn't behave like that.
Well,
I mean, like, I dated a guy up here too. I didn't really date him. I hung out with a guy up here 2 years who didn't even have a car. But he was highly intelligent. He had a degree in biology, and he was good company. We only hung out, like, at his apartment. We'd only go out to eat once a month. We'd run errands together. We were more like friends.
Right.
What?
Why didn't you want to marry? Why didn't you want to marry him, though?
First of all, the company I work for, Don, you're back on the air, by the way. The company I work for, he got fired from. Secondly, I was very busy in those 2 years, and I also started gambling treatment during that time. Another thing is he only offered so much in the relationship. Like, a couple times when I was broke, you know, like, he'd say, I bought $200 worth of tires for my daughter, Scotty. One time he told me he won $28,000 at the casino in Hinckley, which is an hour and a half from here. And then he came home the next weekend and told me about it. Then he took me out for dinner at a restaurant, and it came to like $30, and he gave me $9, the money that was left over from the, you know, like, I guess he handed her 40 or whatever. He gave me $9, and I laughed my head off that if he had $28,000 in the bank, he doesn't have a car, his rent's $300 a month, he lives in the basement of an apartment complex, but there's a side door that he enters, and he's friends with the landlord. His rent is $300 a month, he has no car, no overhead, and all I got out of the $28,000 was a $9 rebate.
Well, here's a question, though.
And we had no. We had about 20% sexual chemistry out of 100%.
Well, here's a question. So imagine this scenario. Imagine if you paid his rent, You bought him a car. In fact, you bought a house for him. You took him on vacations. You bought all his clothes, all the food he needs. You took care of his every need. He didn't work. You could, one, either call him a bum, or two, you could call him a woman. Because guys do this all the time. They pay for, they get the apartment, or they buy the house, they buy the car, they you know, I'm not saying all women are like this, but I'm saying the majority of relationships, no one ever questions that. They go, oh yeah, he's the guy, he took care of his gal, his, you know, but it doesn't go the other way around, where like she pays for everything, she bought the house, the car, she sends him to the doctor, she takes care of all this stuff for him. It's like, you go, well, he's a bum. But,
well, I've been
kinda,
on my
know,
own for so long that I'd never let someone take advantage of me. But one time I had to go to Hinckley, this town about an hour from here, to pick up, I won a free glass Pyrex dish. So I picked him up at his mother's house, and then I gave him, it was 140 miles round trip, 70 one way, 70 back. We were about 10 miles from Duluth, and it dawned on me that he never offered me a red nickel for the gas money. And then later that night I asked him, how come you didn't offer me any gas money? And he said, well, you said you were coming down here anyway. I said, that's true, but still. And he said, well, I was going to take you to Perkins, but I don't remember, like he said, like the conversation went in a different direction. But basically we got in an argument about it, and then I called him cheap. We got in a fight, and we didn't really hang out again for two or three more weeks.
Answer your question. See, like, why didn't you marry him or follow up? He's like, well, because the guy didn't carry his weight. Right? He's cheap. He's a bum. He's a leech. He's just using me.
He's not a leech.
But
it's just that he paid for some of my stuff. He was nice. He always offered me coffee and food at his place, but I just think that he had really big limitations. He was a bachelor set in his ways.
Yeah, he didn't offer you economic advantages. And what I'm saying is, but women do this all the time to guys, and no one calls them out on it. They don't. You know, guys, our neighbor used to, she'd have a new car every time she was with a guy. It's like, where did the car come from? I remember Slick's son one day she had a new car, and she's driving that around. And there was this dude there, you know, the guy who bought it. And he said, who's that guy? I said, he's the next in line. It's like, that's the routine. And no one, like, gets upset about it. They just go, well, that's because guys
have to step up. Some women are able to pull that off. Like, I had low expectations of this guy. His name was Steve. I'm not using his real name, but I had low expectations of him because after a while, like, he told me, okay, Fond Duluth is in downtown Duluth. He said, I went downtown and I won $500. You know, blah, 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 blah. I put it in the bank. I paid off my credit cards. But then I already had noticed after 3 months. First, we were just friends anyway to begin with. Then after 6 months, we slept together a few times. But I only did it because I hadn't had sex in 2 years, and I thought maybe I was fading off the planet.
Oh, yeah.
But I really shouldn't have had sex because it wasn't we didn't all of a sudden have this moment of passion where we really wanted each other. It just kind of happened. And I did I did feel guilty about it because then the relationship changes after you have sex. And then your expectations and your desires change. And that's when I started becoming more critical of him. So it just kind of fizzled.
It's almost like, well, here's another thing. It's like it's kind of like if a gal has sex with a guy, now she has all access to finance, to time, to energy, to everything. When a guy gets sex from a woman, he doesn't expect, you're going to pay for this and that, you're going to get me a new car, and you're, you know, you're going to take care of all my stuff. It's like, no, it's like a favor. It's like, it's not a 50-50, like, well, you had a physical need, I had a physical need. It's like, no, you're giving this so that way you can get that. And I don't think I was that scrupulous,
but I do think, generally speaking, that he was a kinder person than me. Like, he grew up in a small town. He was very attached to his mother. But I always noticed he did more things for his male friends than for me. Like, I had to ask. And to tell you the truth, I think in the long run, he wasn't willing to go out of his way for me. He wanted sex from me all the time later on, but I only, out of the 10 times he asked, I probably only gave it to him 3 times. But the fact of the matter is I didn't really enjoy him that way. I enjoyed his friendship more.
His company, right.
I enjoyed his friendship, just sitting in his apartment watching TV, shooting the breeze with no expectations. That way, at least you know the friendship's going to last.
But
now he started dating a 35-year-old bimbo who weighs about 110 pounds, and he started doing things for her that he never offered for me, and I got pissed, and the friendship ended. I told him off one day.
And in a way, that I'm sure that gal's kind of using him. So, you know, at some point... as long as she kind of puts out or is providing that sexual attraction, it keeps going. But the minute she cuts services, you know, I mean, she might want to get married and then she could cut him off and then still get access to all the goodies. I think that you do run into a point where you say, okay, I have this person approving me. Like they're basically saying, I love you or I accept you. And that feels good. It's like a drug. But the question is, why can't we love ourselves? Why do we need another person to? Why does one person out of 7 billion have to tell us that we're happy, you know, or that we're good people? Like we don't. So a lot of it's in our brain. It's our wiring to want to be, you know, accepted. But really,
well, let me finish. I think I can answer your question if you let me finish the story. Well, I'm very productive. You know, I work 80 to 90 hours a week. I run a radio show twice a week. I also blog, and I have a lot of friends, and I'm the vice president of Toastmasters Public Relations. So plus I give Lauren rides to work 3 times a week here and there. I'm very productive, and I'm in, you know, those stages of Maslow, not Maslow, but those other stages by a psychologist, like in your 20s, you're supposed to be industrious versus inferiority, like that's the age that you prove yourself and you're the most productive. Well, I didn't hit my peak until my 50s, so Steve saw in me a strong woman that didn't want to depend on him, and he's 48 and I'm 56, and now he's dating someone 36. So now this girl comes along who's like a waif. She's about 115 pounds. She was like a free spirit. Supposedly she slept with over 20 guys in Duluth in a 4-year period, and he told her she can't sleep with any other men while they're dating. He laid down all these rules, and he told me that he wasn't planning on falling in love. It just happened like it was a major chemical blowout. With him and I had already known him a year and a half before I started dating him, so it wasn't love at first sight. We were just friends. So I think, like, he has his hands full, and I think if she gets upset, she's just going to ditch him. Like, she's a very emotional person from what he told me. So, I decided spiritually, like, let him go have his experience with this because maybe this could be his chance, and I didn't see a future. But it was kind of hard that he just kind of, like, blew me off. He didn't blow me off as a friend, but then when I got upset 2 times, then he stopped calling me back because I think he couldn't handle being that lady's girlfriend plus my friend. She had long hair and kind of like thin, interesting looking lips. I would say she's a 7 on a scale of 10. Like she's interesting looking, kind of like a lord, that singer from Australia, but she's not that pretty. She's dynamic and interesting looking. but she's also very insecure because I'm pretty sure she had a drug problem.
Well, here's a question. Is she as good as he could get, you know, on the market for what his value is worth?
Yeah, because he's very smart and he has a good job, but he has no car. So that's a major hindrance. And he's had 4 DUIs in a 25-year period, and he just doesn't want to have a car anymore. He doesn't want to go through the hassle. And he's also in AA. So, yes, I think that is the best he can do.
Wow.
He screwed up along the way. Like, you know how they say the smartest people? It doesn't matter how smart you are. You know, there could be, like, a world-class genius in the Salvation Army shelter. So it really doesn't matter how smart you are. It's what you do with what your opportunities are.
Sounds like Don's back.
I'm back if you haven't. They weren't listening to all the music and all the talk.
Don, are you talking to us or your Uber customer?
I've already dropped them off all the way across town. So I'm free.
Well,
right
I had
now.
You on mute for like 10 minutes while John told me about his
good.
Love affairs.
Good. Because my love affairs have been crazy.
I know, and we kind of like, I do want to apologize to John for what I said the first 5 minutes of the show, because my friend Kale is a private person, and I shouldn't have brought her name up.
Oh, my goodness, you brought up the name? Oh.
Her name is Kay Lee, but I used a different name. Wink,
okay.
Wink, John.
Wink, wink,
well,
John.
I think, too, you know, we all have our propensities, and that's just something, you know, that's natural to Jane. She likes to share her life through, you know, radio, blog, and all that, and that's, you know, that's okay. It's like some people love the spotlight. They love, I mean, Donald Trump loves to tweet. There's some people who would never, ever tweet, you know, or they don't want their thoughts out there. He loves to share. That's his thing. The only thing is he does it only on his own life. You know, it's when you involve other people.
Not necessarily because he got in trouble this week, John. He misspelled
unprecedented.
He misspelled a big word, and now everybody made a bunch of fun of him, including J.K. Rowling, the author of Harry Potter. He spelled unprecedented, unprecedented, like, you know, like
right.
President with un and ed at the end. And big famous people made fun of him.
The point of what I'm making is everyone that's commenting on him are public people who like to Twitter or they like to be on Facebook or they like to post stuff. They're celebrity entertainment people, so they have to get their name out there. You know, J.K. Rowling loves any publicity. They all do, right? Because that's how they make their thing. Even people who claim to be shy, like Michael Jackson, well, if you're that shy, why do you have – Why do you have videos and movies and show your home and, you know, do stuff? It's because you secretly want that out there. It's the person who goes to an island who doesn't have cameras, who doesn't want publicity. You know, that's the kind of person. You don't want to mix them into that mix. You want to keep it with public celebrity people. Like whatever you're discussing, Don is public. I'm public. You know, a lot of people like
that. Well, my worst prodigal daughter story, I wasn't going to share tonight. It's something you don't even know about. It's when I was 26 years old, something happened. But the fact of the matter is that we all, there's a psychologist said that we have 4 windows. The window that we let others see and we reveal ourselves, that's the public window. The second window is the public-private. What we keep private and what we allow to be public. And then the third window is the private window where we don't allow others to see and we don't reveal it past ourselves. And I kind of forgot what the fourth window was. So we all have that. I don't think Michael Jackson was ever, there was only like 2 to 3 interviews in his entire life where he really opened up. And after that sexual accusation in Santa Barbara, he was really reluctant to do that.
Well, sort of, except when you go out in front of 50,000 people, you have to promote that. And I mean, it's as simple as, then why does he have his baby, blanket, hanging him over a window, up railing for photographers 50 feet up in the air or however they were, right? Like,
well, that was a people-pleasing moment, and he definitely was not thinking clearly. Right?
Right. Well, right. And that's
no,
what
you,
I'm
don't,
saying
you
well.
Don't. You don't. You don't please people by hanging your baby over a balcony.
Well, I don't know why he did it. He must have had a really bad poor judgment at that point. Like, he was excited to show him, but then he wasn't even thinking about what exactly he was doing.
He had a bad batch of downers. That's what he had.
Okay.
He was down like in Brazil or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Michael
I wasn't with him that day, to tell you the truth, but he did a lot of strange things, you guys. Like, his second child that Debbie Rowe gave birth to? Like, I guess, that she gave birth in the hotel room or something, and he kind of, grabbed the baby up and held it all bloody for, 3 hours. I don't know. Like, he did a lot of weird shit, okay?
He's a public person, is what I'm saying. Even when he's being private, he's it's kind of like a thing of, I'm acting real shy. Like, they would say, in private, he talks normal. When he gets in front of the public, he talks with a little whisper voice to make it sound like he's very shy and withdrawn. And he is. I'm shy, too. But I'm a public person. But there are people who just are not public at all. They don't want to get up in front of people, in front of 50,000. They don't want to have their face. You remember when he had the court trial and he was a couple times, as he was leaving, he'd get up on top of the car, the limo, and he'd start posing and striking poses, and people are taking pictures. It's like, why would you do that in a court thing? Again, if you're a private person, you don't want to have any publicity, especially when it's a child, sex case. He's just standing up on the car, he's doing a...
Well, he was really emotionally fragile. You should go. Do you have Netflix, John?
There's
a documentary on that time when he went through that first trial and how there were a couple fans up there in not Santa Barbara, it's a little north of there.
Yeah.
But they actually quit their job. Yeah, they quit their job so they could go up there to support him in the trial. And that movie shows it was really a fan-based movie, but it also showed how emotionally fragile he was and how he almost collapsed in the hospital a couple times during that time. And that he couldn't handle it. It was too much for him. That's the type of scrutiny.
Right. He was driven to get acceptance. And to be on stage, you get that attention. And off stage, again, he'd have Neverland. He'd have all those kids come over and stay. Again, whether public or private, he needed someone to validate who he is. And that's nothing wrong with that. People, that's being a human. But there's a point where he either controls you or you control it. And in his case, I don't think
when
he
got up and jumped on that car the day of the trial, I just think it was a nervous reaction. Like, he was doing what he was familiar with, but it was pretty a stupid of a move.
That's just part of the package of who he is. And nothing. Again, it's not. I'm not saying it's necessarily bad. I'm just saying that's the natural display of where he's at. That he didn't want to. If you really wanted, when people say, I don't want attention, well, then you've got a lot of money. Move to an island where you never see anyone and you're by yourself. Well, no, they don't want that. They want to be like, here I am in my corner. See, I like being by myself. Make sure the camera zooms in on me. And here I am driving all these
Well, I don't think Michael Jackson I don't think he was. He was in the spotlight his whole childhood, even when he didn't want to be. And he liked that reclusiveness of climbing up in the tree in Neverland and just sitting there and writing lyrics and being alone. I think he went through a lot of phases, John, where he didn't want to be in the public eye at all.
What I'm saying, the reality is there are celebrities and people who don't want the spotlight who just left. They disappeared. And when people try to look them up, it's like, don't bring your camera. Don't talk to me. I really want to be left alone. He wasn't that kind of person. He was still needed people around. Because, again, imagine you're accused of molesting children and having sleepovers with them and being in bed with them. What's the first thing you're going to do is don't have sleepovers, right? You're going to have cameras set up. You're going to have security. You're going to have separate rooms. What does he do? The first thing is sleepovers. Oh, there's more kids in my bed, and let's have some alcohol.
Well, okay, so we're kind of getting away from the topic of the show, which is Prodigal Son, but I guess Michael Jackson could fit that description better than anybody else. Because only in his death was he really redeemed.
I'm not
when his daughter
Michael.
Got up and said, go ahead, Don. Oh, I thought Don was going to say something.
What I'm just saying is he had a particular
I think you're
kind of
hard
attention.
On certain public figures and you're easier on others.
Well, I'm saying, no, you're missing my point. All I'm saying is he had an extreme need for
John's phone cut off, Don. John, you can still call back in. Don Gallimore, are you with us? Well, anyway, I'm going to... Oh, good, John's calling back. I think Don's on another Uber call. Hi, John, you're back on the air.
Hi, yes.
Okay,
so,
are you in the Marina Del Rey tonight?
No, I'm at the 99er catching up on my shopping. So the point of what I'm saying is just that he had this extreme need for validation and attention. And that's where it manifested itself, you know, in various ways with, you know, having kids over. And how does it relate to what we were discussing earlier? It's just that in relationships, we all look for that kind of validation and acceptance. And the point is, it's not really about loving other people. It's about loving ourselves. And if you can love yourself, then you don't need that validation. Because you realize how fickle it is. Like, you know... you're in love, someone says you're the greatest person, and you think, oh, I'm special. And one day they say, oh, I don't think so, or I'm out of love with you. Well, does that mean you're no longer special and all that person that you were is no longer important?
First I'll answer the first question. I think Janet Jackson said that at one point when, like, Michael was getting really thin, you know, it was about three to 6 months before he died, and she tried to visit him at his home in Las Vegas where he was staying, and he wouldn't let her in. So there were times where genuine family people tried to reach out, and he distanced himself from the people that he was closest to. And then there were other times when he reached out to his fans because they knew he unconditionally, you know, they loved him unconditionally. So I'm not saying he was using the fans, but he reached out to them in mysterious ways. And he probably didn't even intend to die with a propofol, but he just had poor personal care management towards the end. No, he needed somebody to keep him on the ground, and that foreign doctor from one of the islands didn't handle the situation right. So it's hard to really say where Michael Jackson was at, but Donald Trump, your buddy, said it best in one of the very first interviews that he had in January of 2016. He said that Michael Jackson was my friend. He stayed at Trump Towers many times, but he said that he lost his confidence. And after he lost his confidence, pretty much the rest of them became pretty lost. And he never recovered. So there were fragments of him. The only fragment of himself that remained strong was his, he liked being a parent. He loved being a parent, and that was the only one certain joy of his life. So.
Well, it's a sad thing because he should be still alive, but he was doing what he wanted to do, and he accomplished more than what a lot of people have ever done. So I just hope he's in a good place and he's resting. I do think that unfortunately people get caught up in their lifestyle and they can't get out of it. And I just think it kind of goes back to, if he was happy with himself and accepted himself, it wouldn't have driven him to such extremes. But would he change anything? I don't know. You know, I think his choices were at a certain point become inevitable. You know, it's like a certain destiny. And if you change certain aspects, it changes everything else. You know, if you're secure with yourself, you're no longer that driven to be on stage and to be the best. You're comfortable. You know, you can retire. You can kick back. So a lot of components go into making the person who they are. You know, like, why do you do a radio blog? You know, it's like you could quietly sit somewhere and not be have the attention, you know.
Well, you know, I don't do it for attention, John. I've been doing it for 6 years, and I have many reasons why I do it. One reason is because I haven't become a professor yet of political science, and I do it to keep my brain active, because when you and Don aren't on the show and I'm doing it by myself, a lot of times I espouse political theories that I learned at Cal State Northridge that keep my brain fresh. So that's one reason I do it, is for outreach, because I think people think I'm a liberal, but I'm actually a moderate. And I do it to keep the sanity in the system, the political vitriol at bay. So I overheard on National Public Radio tonight, there was this lady who started this club in her town, that you had to take someone from the opposite political spectrum out to lunch once a week. So one time she took a conservative friend out to eat, and she was a Tea Party member, and she said to the Tea Party lady, why do you think that all liberals are terrorist-loving, you know, arm-embracing, intellectual elitists? And then the Tea Party woman said back, why do you think we're all gun-toting, ignorant racists? And then they both kind of laughed, and then they made a pledge to each other that they would, anytime they ran into somebody who had a polar opposite political view, they would try to preach tolerance and acceptance.
Wow.
Shocking. Wow. Where would you call people like me who have to deal with people of both or all parties, all races, all genders, all religious backgrounds?
John, are you shuffling your 99 cents basket around?
Yes, he is.
I would call you a productive member of society, Don, because you and Pat are one of the most civically engaged people I've ever known. And I don't even donate an hour a week to the Lions Club. I do lift people in wheelchairs and wipe people's asses and clean toilets at work. Paid to do it.
Right. And that's a good thing. But we do some of those things and we don't get paid.
No, you don't. And the only thing that I do each week that I don't get paid for is I give public speeches at Toastmasters, because three out of four weeks that we have meetings 4 weeks a month, I'm the only one prepared to give a speech. And I also publicize it and I encourage other speakers, and that's something I do for free. So That's about my only pub. And I also, I bought 5 Christmas presents today, one for a homeless kid, one for one in a wheelchair, one for my favorite student, and one for my 2 fifth grade students I tutor. So I try to do extra things on the side, but a lot of times, let's face it, my social work I get paid for.
Right.
Well, Don, what do you have to say tonight? Because me and John have been talking the whole time.
Well, all I need to do is tell you Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and everybody knows what I'm talking about. What's happened is that I went to church today, and it was kids' performance day. So I had my grandson and give a little speech. Jesus is born, that's all he said. It went over like gangbusters. He was a star. So the pastor preacher said it was going to be a short sermon, and then of course he got the spirit, and the Lord took over, and it ended up being almost 2 hours and 15 minutes.
Like people were chanting in the pews.
Well, I mean, as amen is chanting. I mean, this is not a church where they chant incantations like the, I forgot what they're called anyway. But, anyway, they don't do that chanting, but they are.
Pentecostal.
Pentecostal.
It's not Pentecostal.
It is Pentecostal.
But the church
is not Pentecostal, it's Baptist. But Reverend, he went on and on about the fact that all of the stuff that we see doesn't give us pride. It doesn't give us the things that we get are not from material things. What is it?
Like the reward is like peace of mind and spiritual benefit.
Right. It's all like that. You know, and so that was wonderful. It turned out to be a wonderful message, but started off a little slow, and he was giving testimony from his past life and how hard it is to keep everything together, even though it may look like it on the outside, on the inside, it could be boiling over with pressure and anxiety and animosity towards other people. So you have to take time out to understand that the world aren't things that you go in and worship. You worship yourself and your fellow human beings and take pride in what you do and what you are, and not necessarily in what is around you or what you've acquired. So we were in church for 2.5 hours pretty much with that message. Maybe even longer than that. But it was a beautiful day up here, a little chilly. We're finished with our rains for right now until next week. And so we're going to have another beautiful environment, atmosphere here in northern Nevada. So I can't complain.
Well, I'm sure it was 25 below this morning. I got to church at 10 o'clock. It was about 17 below. The whole church was packed, and we had a Christmas program, too, and it was interactive. Like, the kids ran the show from the stage up at the front, like by the altar, and then they invited people up, like, saying, we need a Mary now, we need a Joseph now, we need a wise man. And it was kind of like an interactive theatrical script. And then everybody had these pipe cleaner shiny angel things around their head, because in Scandinavia they celebrate St. Lucia Day, where St. Lucia was someone who was knighted for the sainthood. She wore candles on top of her head in Sweden, and she went to poor people's homes around Christmas time and delivered food and stuff. So everybody in the congregation had like these angel things around their heads. It was cute to see like 85-year-old people, you know, like wearing them.
I wouldn't know.
I felt like I was part of the kingdom of God today.
Exactly.
So,
and that was what I think today was all about. Is it gives us a week to think about why we're here and why we're celebrating this time of year. Most people are interested in how much they can spend for their grandkids, yada yada yada, and we're not here to see who can spend the most money. We're here to praise whomever the Christianity and the Jesus Christ in Christianity, where this holiday comes from. But we've got Hanukkah and we've got certain days in the Islam faith. We have just the Chinese culture recognizes this time, even though their time of Christmas is, I believe, in March. So we've got time for them. But this is a time where everybody recognizes around the world to celebrate something and to relax and give thanks. And that's what
And I some people, black people celebrate Kwanzaa.
Right. I'm sorry, I missed Kwanzaa. But this time of year is a holiday spirit type of year, and that's what I was kind of getting at.
I agree, and Hanukkah is usually like December 6th, but this year it falls
right.
the same week as Christmas, which is very unusual. So
exactly.
That's kind of a spiritual blessing.
It is. And that's
so,
one of the things I'm learning not to say Merry Christmas. That's very, very difficult when you've done it all
well,
your life.
Well, I think it's okay. Guess who advocated to say Merry Christmas? Out of, John would think, oh, she's a pagan celebrity. Raven Simone was
John.
On. No, Raven Simone is on The View once in a while, but now she's starting a new TV show on ABC. So she hasn't
right.
been on, but right before Thanksgiving, she said, you know, why can't people say Merry Christmas? It's a Christian holiday. And why can't they put the, you know, Christ in Christmas, like in store advertisement? She said if it wasn't Christ's birthday, there wouldn't even be a holiday. So what's the big deal? Why can't people say it? And John would probably think, oh, she's a lesbian. She'd never say something like that. But she said it in plain spoken talk on the show with mincing no words. She wasn't trying to be politically correct or politically wrong.
Right. Well, we're worried about her right now, and she's just, you know, I mean, not worried about her, but she has a valid point, because when you say Merry Christmas, you are speaking generally only to the birth of Christ. And
right, it's a Christian holiday. Now, if you're
right,
around someone who's agnostic or atheist, then you could say, like, sometimes just, I don't consciously do it, but sometimes if I'm around people who are unfamiliar, like I might have a few friends around who are familiar and, like at Toastmasters, I'll just say Happy Holidays. I don't feel like I'm
right.
compromising my religion by saying that.
Right.
But if I feel like I need a witness to someone, like they look like they're in distress or in trouble, then I might try to say something more.
Well, I think for the most part, what's happening with me is that I'm dealing with so many people that it's just so much easier to say Happy Holidays and not have any trepidation on anybody getting offended. And that's what I'm talking about. I'll still say Merry Christmas to everybody that I know and that who I know is Christian. But I deal with so many people in so many different realms of religious consciousness that I believe that learning to say Happy Holidays is a little bit easier than having to go through the dichotomy.
I think it just depends on the situation. Like, for example, Toastmasters is to me what like a county city meeting at the city arena was with you. You're not gonna walk up to someone that you don't know very well personally and say, "Merry Christmas," like, unless it's a personal friend of yours, or, you know, you're just gonna briskly say Happy Holidays and not try to get into some kind of religious debate. But for example, one of my friends pulled a stunt this week, and he was in emotional trouble. And I texted him, I said, sometime you're going to have, it's not anybody you guys know, he's somebody up here. I said, I would like to talk to you about spiritual darkness and making choices based on what you think you want versus what's best for you. And he said that he would be willing to listen to me at a certain point in time, and then we ended up talking last night for 30 minutes in person. But basically, some people aren't open to any type of religious reformation, and they make that perfectly clear. So you're pretty much, people who are like that already give those vibes off, so it's better not to approach them too directly, especially if it's like a coworker, because you can get in trouble for doing that.
Well, that's one of the reasons why coworkers need to know where you're from at first. At that, you know, in general, when you're out there, you're dealing with people who you don't know, and you don't, you know, you just want to make sure that you're politically correct. That's all.
Right. Well, John, I think we should wrap the show up a little early tonight. You know, I don't see any reason to prolong it. So, what's your conclusion, John?
My conclusion is that tomorrow life will begin or end for the United States of America.
Very good point.
After they vote Hillary in?
No, Hillary won't be voted in. It'll be somebody else, because that's the way the system works.
Oh, come on, Don. Like 80% of the Electoral College is going to go for someone besides Clinton or Trump.
Oh, no, it's not going to be the Electoral College's call. This is going to be...
It's tomorrow, Don. They're voting tomorrow.
No, I'm talking about the new president. This is just to vote in... to see if he's voted in. This will not necessarily mean that Hillary...
Okay, well,
as
Democrats are... We're hoping and praying for Hillary.
No, she won't be qualified for this. This is just to anoint Donald. This has nothing to do with Hillary.
Technically, you're wrong, because... there's 535 members of the Electoral College, and they can't change their mind. Okay, my conclusion is that Don needs to go back into the United States government history book and
wrong.
The church.
I'll go back in there. All righty.
Okay, well, I have nothing more to say. I'm going to play one of John's songs to cap off the show. So,
alrighty.
Mary, John, I'll probably be mailing, Don, I'm mailing you a card tomorrow, but I'm mailing John something extra because he's a bachelor. So,
alright. Uh-oh. You can send those.
It's not a prenuptial agreement.
Wow.
It's actually a present from Lauren. I'm mailing you.
Okay.
No.
Lauren Hoffman, who's surpassed the corporate ladder for all of us, is sending John a gift. So with
there
that, I'm going to play one of songs. I'm playing one of John's songs. Good night.
Alrighty.
Yay.
Good
night.
Merry
good
Christmas.
Night. Merry Christmas.
Is the end.
I had one thing to tell you, John. My desktop mainframe, it has a virus, and I couldn't upload any more of your CDs this week. I was frankly too busy, but I'll try to do it by January 1st.
That's okay. I can always email you songs too.
Yeah, because I've been using my laptop in my bedroom, but this is the only night I've been home all week. I work graveyard 6 days in a row. So I looked at the CDs tonight on the kitchen table, and I still plan to do it.
Oh, great.
So my favorite ones are your Too Many Questions, the one I played at the beginning about Keeper of the Lonely Hearts, and the one I just played now.
One night you'll have to play Someone You Recall. That's spooky and mysterious.
And, yes, I have two of the CDs that I never downloaded on my kitchen table, so I'll look for that song in the next couple days. Okay?
Cool. Well,
so,
remember,
1 week
right
from
thing.
Now it's going to be Christmas, so I don't know if we're going to have a show for 10 days because I'm going to the Twin Cities on Wednesday to Friday.
Wow. Well, I'm sure you'll need to do it as part of your therapy, but my last word is do the right thing, vote for Trump.
Well, I'm not in the Electoral College, so you're pretty safe. I live an hour from Canada, and I have options.
Nice.
So, but I have been signing my Christmas cards, have a Trump-free New Year.
Wow. Well, you know, I think change.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think the change will be good. I think he's going to do some different stuff. And, you know, an interesting thought, because a lot of people, I think one of the biggest anti-Trump thing is basically his temperament, his kind of person should not be in charge of the nuclear codes, that he'll get us in a war with China, that, you know, he'll blow up the planet. You know, interesting point about America is we weren't given this country by Britain. We didn't say, oh, if you would like to, I hope it doesn't ruffle your feathers. I hope it doesn't upset you. You know, will you please just kind of let us do our thing here? You know what the famous saying was? Give me liberty or give me death. It's like, I will fight for my freedom. And it's that kind of attitude that got us our country. Now, whether right or wrong, you know, there's a lot of things that we do that are bad for the environment. We consume a lot of stuff. We're arrogant. But the point is, part of being American is saying, I'm willing to roll the dice here and fight for my freedom. I'm not going to just be, Great Britain's slave or just follow whatever they want. I'm a free person. And
I do want to mention one thing in defense of Trump. First of all, in some cases, the media is baiting trouble already because they did a mini special on CNN about, it was like an hour long, on Vladimir Putin's leadership style and how he's imprisoned 2 to 3 people who disagreed with him, and how Trump is going to stand up to a totalitarian-style government. And they said that they had a foreign policy expert on saying that Putin would be doing all the taking and Trump would be doing all the giving, and Trump's not going to like that. And I don't like how they try to set up future scenarios of conflict that haven't even taken place yet. And they've also baited that subject with China, too. So I think it's better just to let sleeping dogs lie until something really happens.
I think the future will be very interesting. It won't be boring and something that we're not used to. And I think it's time to shake things up. You know, people are afraid of our country going to war. there wouldn't have to be a shot fired at the rate we're going. Our country will just hand itself over. We're just slowly bleeding away financially, and no one's stepping up and saying, let's turn this thing around. And whether it works or not, I just think that someone needs to stand up and be bold and be brave. It's like, you know, basically going to school and having your lunch money taken every day by bullies, you know, by politicians, by corporations, by other countries, and kind of a outsider, you know, maybe a bit of a jerk, and he comes up and you try to be nice to him. He says, you know, hey, leave my friend alone. Don't touch their lunch money. And he sucker punches these bullies, and you go,
well, actually,
I
don't
like
want to get into the whole
up.
Foreign policy dimension, but the world is a very complex place now, John, and they had a special on CNN tonight about the Netherlands and how tolerant they've been and how they let some of those hostile Muslims in who hate the white culture, and how one of the foreign policy government officials in the Netherlands said that they have been too tolerant and easygoing of people who don't like them to bring them in. So people are aware of the, you know, it's obvious with the terrorism problems that have existed since the Nairobi strike in Kenya in 1996 that there have been major problems. Nobody's denying it. The fact of the matter is Donald Trump can't strong arm his way through everything because many of the foreign relationships we have with other governments are delicate. So I don't want to get into that whole thing tonight because our show is over, but supposedly he said hello to Taiwan and nobody said made diplomatic overtures to that country in 32 years. So that's just one example, you know.
Oh, yeah. I think, though, that's the point, is people are tired of being on eggshells around everyone. And it encourages other countries to be aggressive towards us. You know, you would think if you're really nice, if people would back up and they'd treat us nice. People who are a-holes don't operate that way. They think that you're weak, you want to take advantage. It's an animal kingdom.
Well,
they find
when
the
we
weakest
get together
weakest.
Next time, I'm going to read to you something Bob Graff wrote from Milwaukee, a former activist, that there's a lot of crap going on even under the Obama administration that about compromising, you know, the United Nations codes and stuff like that. So every country is in the United States have done just as much good in the world as they have done bad. So it's a dual. I don't want to get into it tonight. I'm just too tired. Argentina is one of those countries. But thank you for joining us, and have fun resting at your home tonight with your 99-cent goodies.
Yay.
All right, God bless and get a good night's sleep. Good night.
Yes. Good night, America.
Good night, Canada.